Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. We're going to begin this hour by speaking with my friend, Dr. Gregory Popchek, who is a radio host at EWTN. With his bride, Lisa, he and his bride have also formed CatholicCounselors.com and the Catholic Households on Mission, HOM, app and network. One of the things that Greg and I will be talking about has to do with the way therapists are trained, especially within the Catholic Church. The issue that we're talking about today is that a new survey by Catholic TV suggests widespread emotional distress amongst U.S. Catholics. And the distress is caused by numerous issues, but it's raising questions, genuine questions, about mental health and how mental health may shape parish life and even mass attendance and parish involvement, let alone national church involvement. One of the issues that we have within the Christian sphere, I've seen this globally, has to do with what we call religious bias. And it has to do with the fact that because we have the faith, it is easy for us to think that we no longer need to work on natural things, including the psychological health of the individual. I want to be clear here. We do live in an overly therapized age, for want of a better expression. And that means that in an overtly therapeutic culture, we are constantly being told that we need to seek out avenues for self-validation. But at the same time, there is a merit from that extreme to pull back to what God wants us to do in terms of mental health. In a particular way, to understand that grace builds upon nature, and therefore there is a natural reality to the psyche of the human person. Well, Greg and Lisa and Catholic Counselors and the Catholic HOM app work with all of those structures within a framework of the Church's teachings to bring about true human flourishing. And so we'll talk about that. After that, I want to speak about the issue of infertility amongst Christians. I saw a piece in Catholic World Report that prompted some thought about it, and I think it's an important conversation. And then finally, we speak with Wilfred McClay about the Jewish roots of American liberty. For much of American history, we have to understand that there is a lot that we have gained from the Old Testament heritage. All this after the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Tuesday, February 3rd. It's the Feast of St. Blaise. Today's news is brought to you by Visiting Angels, providing loving care and assistance for seniors in need at visitingangels.com. The White House confirming the U.S. has shot down an Iranian drone that approached the USS Abraham Lincoln in the Arabian Sea. With more, here's John Fink.
Press Secretary Caroline Levitt says the drone approached the ship in an aggressive manner. She added CENTCOM told her the action was necessary to secure the safety of American personnel. This comes as U.S. and Iranian officials are expected to meet on Friday. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth said the U.S. is prepared to take action if Iran won't negotiate over its nuclear program.
Former President Bill Clinton and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton are agreeing to testify before Congress on Jeffrey Epstein. The House was just days away from voting on whether to hold the Clintons in criminal contempt of Congress for skipping earlier deposition dates. The sainthood cause for Adele Bryce, the only approved Marian visionary in the U.S., has been opened. In 1859, the Blessed Mother appeared to Adele three times, who instructed her to gather the children and teach them what they should know for salvation. Then in 1871, during the Great Peshtigo Fire in Wisconsin, Adele prayed for Mary's intercession, and the community gathered in the chapel, and all inside were spared. Now that site is a home of the National Shrine of Our Lady of Champion, which has welcomed over 200,000 pilgrims last year. Today's show host Savannah Guthrie's mother was abducted from her southern Arizona home and her life is in jeopardy. That's a part of the update from Pima County Sheriff Chris Nanos, who said it's not known if the 84-year-old Guthrie was targeted or if this is a random crime.
We do believe that Nancy was taken from her home against her will, and that's where we're at.
An alleged ransom note has been received by TMZ. From your Ave Maria Radio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. As is the case every week, my friend Dr. Gregory Popchek generously joins us with his time and his talents. Greg is no stranger to this program. He and his bride co-host More to Life on EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Ave Maria Radio. They also are the creators of the Catholic Households on Mission, HOM, app and network. And we talk about questions pertaining to mental health in the Catholic Church. A new Catholic TV survey suggests widespread emotional distress amongst U.S. Catholics. And that raises questions about how Christians tackle the question of mental health as Christians, but also as an institutional church. Greg, thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's always a joy to connect with you. And you and I have talked about this before. There's a tendency amongst very faithful Christians to sidestep questions pertaining to legitimate mental health needs and concerns. Would you please share with us why this tendency amongst faithful Christians?
Sure, and I think this is a common problem that we run into both on the show, More to Life, and through our pastoral counseling practice at CatholicCounselors.com. But the technical term for what you're describing is spiritual bypassing. And it's the idea that I should be able to pray this problem away, or if I was just a faithful enough Christian, I wouldn't have this problem in the first place. We believe that somehow grace is meant to just make these things magically disappear. The metaphor I like to use with our clients through CatholicCounselors.com or through the radio program, though, is that if we imagine that we were a car, grace would be the fuel that we put in the tank. So the sacraments, the prayers that we say, the spiritual practices that we engage in fill our tank with really good fuel, high octane, if you will. But if we have a full tank of great gas but four flat tires, we're still not going anywhere. You know, if we have a full tank of gas and a cracked engine block, we're still not going anywhere. As St. Thomas Aquinas put it, grace builds on nature, right? It doesn't supplant it. And so because of that, we have to give God something good to work with. And of course, God is constantly calling us to healing and working in our lives to heal us, but he gives us earthly means through medical practice and psychological practice to make sure that we are a well-honed, well-tuned instrument to be used in God's hands to do his work. And so that means that even if I am the most faithful Catholic person, the most devout and sincere Catholic faithful individual, I'm still going to need to do work on my emotional health, my relational health, and my physical well-being too.
You bring up a crucial point about the fact that God doesn't destroy our nature. He wants to build it and perfect it. Grace builds upon that nature. To that end, I also want to invite you to speak to the fact that we've gotten really good, especially in science, about the physical type of medicine. But the avenue of mental health and, you know, anywhere from proper research to strategies, there's still a tremendous amount of work that needs to be done and corrected too. You know, people like you and your bride are helping bring that spiritual corrective to where the avenue has gone astray.
Yes, thank you for that. And I think that's a big focus of our work. How do we interpret the empirical insights from contemporary counseling psychology through the lens of faith so that people don't feel like they have to betray their faith and beliefs and values to become mentally healthy, because you don't. In fact, there's a lot of overlap between what the science, what the psychological sciences say about what leads to a healthy functioning person and relationship and what the Catholic Church teaches about the same. And so a lot of our work is really guided by St. John Paul's theology of the body, which St. John Paul said was his attempt to promote a comprehensive view of the person. Like, what does it mean to be a flourishing human person in healthy, holy relationships? And a lot of we've not run into a case where it's not, is supported directly by psychological science and research. And so it's our job as Catholic counselors and my team at CatholicCounselors.com to really interpret that information through that lens of faith so that we can give people the best of both worlds. You know, going back to this study for a second, you know, the study that you mentioned found that in a representative sample of almost 1,600 Catholics, 69% report chronic fatigue, 66% struggle with sleep, 55% have recently felt hopeless about something. 86% say that faith is central to their lives, but up to a third of Catholics have even thought about self-harm in the last few months. So this is, you know, this is a significant challenge that we are facing. And unfortunately, a separate study by Pew Research found that over 70% of priests don't feel that they've got the adequate training to deal with even the most common problems that their parishioners bring to them, because their preparation is mostly sacramental and liturgical, but it's not pastoral in the sense of kind of pastoral psychology. And so there's a lot of work that the church needs to do in this area. In fact, I don't want to go on too long here, but it dovetails well with my dissertation research that I did in 2005 that looked at nationally Catholic versus Protestant perceptions of the adequacy of local and church-based mental health services. And it found that although Catholics and Protestants, faithful Catholics and Protestants both value faith-based options over secular options, Catholics are much less satisfied with the options that are available to them than their Protestant counterparts are. And also Catholics, in our study, said that they wanted 17 different competencies in their counselors than Protestant counselors have. So where Protestants tend to view or want counselors who were educated in biblical approaches to some problems, Catholics wanted counselors who were up to date with the most recent psychological secular approaches to treatment, but could also integrate their Catholic faith into that. And so we want a much more holistic approach to counseling than many evangelical Christians especially.
In other words, the expectation, especially amongst Catholics, for mental health needs is a lot higher, which that can correspond to a lot of reasons that you've shared about in the past, but also just shared. This also seems to tie in with a lot of the CDC studies that you and I have spoken about in the past, which is, you know, rising depression and anxiety rates that we're seeing, even amongst people who don't have a religious outlook of life. So we're seeing a similar pattern happen within the church. Can you please comment on how, therefore, the Catholic institutional church needs to have a better response to this?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to recognize that emotional problems, relationship problems, mental health problems are not something that only a small percentage of people experience. Upwards of 30% of adults will experience some form of depression, anxiety, mental health problems, relationship problems in any given year. And that's a huge number, especially when you talk about the number of Catholics. And we are not really responding adequately to that. You know, that's really the mission of CatholicCounselors.com, our ministry. But it's a challenge because, as I was just sharing, Catholics really want a professional who is capable of interpreting the most recent empirical insights from counseling psychology through that lens of Catholic spirituality and theology. And there really aren't any organizations training people how to do that. You know, so we work very hard to make sure that any counselor I hire goes through a period of formation before they would see their first client that could last, you know, 6 months or more, where we're doing reading, weekly discussion, case conversations. And I want to make sure that all of our people are really grounded both in the psychological research and the Catholic theology so that we can really provide that to folks. But I'm not aware of any other programs, academic or otherwise, that do that. Now, there's an organization, the Association for Clinical Pastoral Education, which is responsible for certifying hospital chaplains. And more recently, they've taken over the training of pastoral counselors in general. Mm-hmm. But I think there are maybe six Catholic, well, maybe a dozen Catholic members, and my team are all of them, you know, essentially. So, you know, which is not to say that other people aren't doing good work. I don't mean to imply that. Yeah. But I'm saying that for the most part, it's self-styled, right? It's I'm a faithful Catholic counselor who wants to do counseling, so I'm going to kind of put it together in my own way, which is fine as far as it goes, but we want to make sure that we're really using as research-based approaches to integrating faith and counseling as possible. And there is actually a lot of good research that talks about how to do it well, but I'm not convinced that there are a lot of Catholic professionals who are trained in that.
We're down to under a minute left in the segment, Greg. So for parents listening, but also just generally anyone listening, everyone's aware of the mental health crises of the modern man, let alone the modern churchgoer. Can you please say a few words of exhortation, but also to plug some of the great work you're doing?
Well, thank you. That's very kind. And I have to say, you know, look, if you're suffering, one thing that we know as Catholics is that suffering is part of life, right? And it's an inescapable part of life. And that, in fact, God, we are privileged as Catholic Christians to cooperate with God to bring healing to suffering, to bring peace out of chaos, to bring order out of misery and suffering. And so getting the best tools available to us is really critical to our spiritual journey as well. So if you are suffering in your relationships, in your emotional life, in your mental health, that's nothing to be ashamed of. That's to embrace that, to recognize it, and to open yourself up to the healing that God wants to give you is exactly what he's calling all of his children to do, so that he can build on that nature and give you the healing to your body, mind, and spirit that we all long for.
My guest has been Dr. Gregory Popcheck. He and his bride Lisa co-host More to Life on EWTN Radio. They also are the producers of Catholic HOM, Households on Mission. Find out more about CatholicCounselors.com and Catholic Households on Mission, and let's beat this mental health crisis with sound research and the faith. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at avemaria.com. That's avemaria.com.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
This program is brought to you by the following nonprofit underwriter.
Are you longing to hear God's voice? Lord, Teach Me to Pray, the free Ignatian Prayer Series, will open your heart to His voice, to the peace you are seeking, and the only love that fulfills the human heart, Jesus. God is calling you to true joy, knowing Jesus personally. Lord, Teach Me to Pray is free. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com, click on the red box, order the Lord, Teach Me to Pray series now. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. I came across this piece in Catholic World Report and I wanted to talk about the findings or at least some of the reflections and insights from the piece. The piece is about infertility in general. It's a topic that's near and dear to my heart, and if you've been listening to this program, I've spoken about it before. Infertility and pregnancy loss, unfortunately, is an issue that plagues Catholic marriages, and it's a wound that in a lot of ways, continues to stay tender. Because the world keeps moving, the parish calendar, the liturgical life keeps turning, and many well-meaning people and conversations keep flowing. But for a lot of these parents, the ache just keeps returning to that same place again and again and again. My bride and I have been married 7 years now. During those 7 years, we've lost 5 children in the womb. 3 of those losses came last year, in the same year, 2025. We ended our year knowing that we were going to lose our 5th child. And that meant that our memories of those events, those times of the year, you know, specific months, specific ultrasound appointments, prayers of desperately prayed in the car, at home, specific moments when we held on to a little bit of hope because we had test results that gave us just a little bit more promise, and then all to watch all of that slip away 3 times in the same year. And that's why when someone speaks of how, you know, time will heal this wound, I understand the instinct. I understand the the intention behind the phrase. I really do. But grief works in different ways for different people, and this is a very specific category of grief that, unfortunately, I believe we as a church have not really come to grips with answering properly. And the more my bride and I have gone through this, the more we've realized that this cross often stays hidden in church communities, even within communities that cherish family life. Don't get me wrong. Here in the Ann Arbor area, we are surrounded by loving Catholics and wondrous Catholic parishes that are pro-life and supportive of life. And we've got networks that create avenues for the bringing forth of life, support of marriage and the family, But when it comes to things like infertility and the loss of a child in the womb, there's a certain kind of hiddenness to the suffering. It doesn't announce itself the same way other exterior sufferings do. And because of that, I wonder if that's colored the way the church answers this question. We've personally known couple friends who have this issue. You know, they smile through the coffee and donuts after Mass. They serve in church. They're very faithful. They stay faithful. They can even hold other people's babies and celebrate with genuine joy. And then they walk back to their car and they look at each other and exchange these looks of heaviness because they don't have the words to express it. And there's a lot of silence around the suffering. And that becomes a secondary burden too, because the couple carries the grief themselves. You're hard-pressed to share it with your own children. And there's a certain awkwardness of deciding whether to mention it to your family, whether to mention it to your friends. You've got a certain fear of being misunderstood. You don't want to come across as trying to seek attention. And you also don't really want to talk about it, but you know you need to. And so the wound just becomes deeper, and you become more and more isolated. And worse, you experience that isolation even within a crowded sanctuary or a group of faithful people. Years ago, I read C.S. Lewis's A Grief Observed, and there were a few quotes and sentences in the piece that in the work that stood out to me. And as my bride and I were going through all this, the loss, our fifth loss, I just started thinking more and more about how Lewis thought about grief. And there's a line that I want to begin with where he says, "No one ever told me that grief felt so much like fear." I mean, he was spot on. That line is a description of something many people will come to discover only after they encounter the loss, and they often don't have the words for it. There's a kind of trembling reality to it. They're restless. There's a certain sense of uncertainty that hangs across over life. It's as if your soul keeps bracing itself for impact and for the other shoe to drop, even though the bad thing has already happened. Lewis would continue by saying that, in a way, pain feels familiar. There's a fogginess, the invisible blanket between the grieving person and the world, the strange experience of finding just general conversations difficult to absorb. In seasons of miscarriage grief, my bride and I have both experienced that barrier, because you hear the words, you're part of the conversations, you even engage in the conversation. You know, you have to go to work, you have to raise the children, you have to go to Mass, you have to have your community events and family gatherings. But it's easy to feel disconnected interiorly from what's going on. You compartmentalize just so you can survive. And that's why even when you receive good news from friends, you celebrate, you really do, but you feel a little distant from it. And jokes, ordinary jokes, even the jokes you make, they feel like they come from an entirely different planet altogether. And at the same time, interiorly, the sense of loneliness just grows in the quiet house. Because every time you have a child or you're trying for a child, as a couple, you start preparing the expectation. You prepare the room, you prepare the bassinet, you start going through the motions of getting ready to welcome the child, and then that's taken away from you. And all of a sudden, it's weird, but the silence becomes deafening. But we turn to the scriptures, and the scriptures actually prepares for this. You know, you look at Rachel in Genesis chapter 30, where she cries out, "Give me children or I shall die," she tells Jacob. Her plea is really raw. It's coming from the depths of her heart. It's honest. And it exposes this deep motherly desire to hold a child, to fulfill not just her desire to welcome life into the world, but at the same time to just experience the fruition of this marital covenant that she shares. You look at 1 Samuel chapter 1, Hannah's weeping in the temple, and she prays with so much intensity that Eli thinks she's drunk, and he misreads her anguish. Because that suffering can be misunderstood by observers who have never experienced it themselves. Elizabeth, in Luke chapter 1, she's described as righteous and faithful, and she carries, Luke describes this word actually, social reproach. because she's never had a child until the Lord visits her and grants her the gift of John the Baptist. I mean, all of these stories show us that a life of holiness can also coincide with this very particular sorrow of infertility or loss in the womb. Abraham, he speaks of his own ache as he stands before God and asking for God to fulfill his promise. What good is all that you've given me if I don't have a child? Everything is going to my servant Eliezer. This is in Genesis 15. Now that question is an honest request of a father who knows that he's chosen to trust God and he's trying to speak plainly, but gosh, the ache of his heart feels very personal and real. When a couple experiences infertility or repeated miscarriage, they stand in this long biblical tradition. We don't realize it, but we do. That lineage matters, by the way, because it means that even the suffering that we're going through right now, as unique as it is, has a place in salvation history. God is not blind to infertility and miscarriages and loss in the womb. Scripture also teaches that the lament of those parents, "How long, O Lord," from Psalm 13, rises to the Lord, because we strive to keep our covenant bond alive. And so this keeps our hearts turned to the Lord, because he knows the value of our tears. I mean, even Jesus wept at the tomb of Lazarus. Death impacts even the God-man, fully God and fully man. His tears show us that the divine Lord has encountered even the depths of our grief of loss. He has encountered the weight of death. And that's why in the face of all of this, I want to encourage everyone listening, especially if you've encountered this kind of loss. Our hope rests in the faithfulness of the heart of our Father. He sees our tears and he binds up our wounds. But I also want to encourage everyone listening who doesn't have a sense of this kind of a loss. Strive to be a presence to people who've encountered this loss. Maybe, as a church, we can heal this wound a little more. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Pete.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
In her diary, St. Faustina wrote, "If only I had a spiritual director from the beginning, I would not have wasted so many of God's graces. If even the saints needed spiritual guidance, how much more do we?" The nonprofit Revive app lets you meet virtually with certified spiritual companions, scheduling sessions at your convenience, helping you grow closer to Christ. Your first two sessions are free. Download the Revive app today. That's REVIV, and then the number 3.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
How are the people of God, the church, related to religions who have yet to receive the gospel? According to the Catholic Catechism, the Church is linked to the Jewish religion. The Jews were the first to hear the Word of God. The Jewish faith is already a response to God's revelation in the Old Covenant. To the Jews belong the patriarchs, the sonship, the giving of the law, the worship, and the promises. Of their race, according to the flesh, is the Christ, for the gifts, says the Catechism, and the call of God are irrevocable. The Muslims are related to the Church in that they acknowledge the Creator, profess to hold the faith of Abraham, and adore the one merciful God, mankind's judge on the last day. The Church's bond with other non-Christian religions stems from the common belief in the origin and end of the human race, which in both cases is our Creator God. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
He is only one of four popes honored as the great.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Leo I was pope at a time when Roman civilization was being overrun by barbarian armies. He stood as a light in the darkness and even saved the city of Rome from destruction by Attila and the Huns. Leo died in 461.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. For much of American history, an impassable gulf seems to separate Jews and Christians, keeping their respective peoples and cultures far apart. In recent decades, at least I hope this is true, that has begun to change. The rise of a militant secularism, one equally hostile to Israel and to America's Judeo-Christian values and institutions, has unexpectedly drawn Jews and Christians closer together. In the face of this of a common civilizational threat, the study of the two traditions' joint contributions to the West has risen to the forefront. In the face of modern anti-Semitism as it's rising today, I think this is an equally important conversation. Joining me to talk about this is Wilfred McClay, author of numerous books, and most recently, The Jewish Roots of American Liberty. He's a professor of history at Hillsdale College. Wilfred, thank you very much for joining us. How are you?
Thank you very much. I'm fine, and I'm delighted to be with you.
I want to the delight and honor is all mine. I mean that sincerely. This is a brilliantly written and systematically thought out book. And before we engage the way you laid out your arguments, Wilfred, I want to also ask you to begin by commenting on the rise of this new anti-Semitism and complete hatred of all things Jewish in Israel, in light of the fact that we actually do owe quite a bit to Hebraic thought in the American experiment.
No, and you know, this goes hand in hand with the way that we've been forgetful of our own heritage, that the framers of the Constitution and the founders, the first settlers, the language of the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible, was something they were completely marinated in. It was full of their discourse was full of biblical references, and they saw the events of the times through the lens of their biblical heritage. So the way we've lost our connection with Judaism is we've lost our connection with the Bible. We've lost our connection with the breadth of our spiritual heritage. And I think that the crisis, various crises we're going through, which is ultimately a crisis of unbelief, of secularism, has had the effect within the Christian world of diminishing the antagonism, which have been intense in the past. You know, one of the things I try to impress on my students, and they have trouble believing me, is how profoundly anti-Catholicism existed in the United States of America, particularly in the 19th century. And they find it hard to believe because we're so past that, although maybe not completely. You might want to comment on that, but it is the crisis of secularism has made us realize what we have in common, more acutely. It's not the best way to bring the church together, the disunified Church of Christ, but it does seem to be having that effect, at least for those of us who are serious mm-hmm. about our faith, who are Orthodox in the small O sense of the term. Mm-hmm. It's having this effect in the Jewish world too, because Judaism is a Jewish. The Jewish people of America are notoriously wedded to liberalism, and yet there's a significant component, and those are the ones that that were sort of helped me think through this book. And I have a co-author too, Stuart Halpern, who's a rabbi. Mm-hmm. They are recovering their heritage, and they're very eager to form bonds with Christians, with serious Orthodox Catholics, Protestants, and so on. So almost like a realignment is occurring, mm-hmm. and it's quite interesting, and I think a lot of hopefulness about it. But it is it's yet to be determined where it's going to go. I'd like to tell you, if I may, how the book originated, mm-hmm. because that's kind of an interesting story. I was invited by the Yeshiva University in New York, which is the only Orthodox Jewish, now this is, or not Orthodoxy in Christianity, Orthodox in Judaism. It's the only Orthodox institution of higher education in the United States. And they wanted me to come up and do some conferences with teachers, Jewish teachers in Jewish day schools who were not convinced that they needed to study American history. That's how this all started. And so I did a couple of these, and they were very well attended. They were really quite enthusiastic gatherings, and people understanding that there are reasons as Jews for them to be grateful to be Americans, that the American promise of religious liberty, of soul liberty, liberty of worship, you know, that these were things that that applied to them and that had not been true of any of the European countries, at least not for an extended time in their history, that it was something unique to America that we had in our founding documents. And also, beyond that, there was in the earliest expressions of Christianity in America, which were Protestant by and large, the Puritans, for example, and they're a very big example, they were a Hebraic people. Mm-hmm. In other words, they took the Old Testament very seriously. They saw what they were doing, coming across the ocean in order to form what they believed to be a truer, more authentic, more faithful church than what they left behind in England. They compared what they were doing to the Israelites. The Israelites, by God's hand, escaping slavery in Egypt and coming into the promised land, the land that God had promised them. So that metaphor, the Exodus, this is what we're talking about, the Exodus, that metaphor, the Exodus, is deep, deep, deep in the American soul. And it affects the way that we think about the country and the way we think about our faith. So it's interesting that this goes back all the way. So I had finally a conference I organized about sort of the influence of Hebraic ideas on the American story, and brought a bunch of speakers, including some very distinguished scholars of Jewish American history. And my co-editor, Stu Halpern, and I kind of looked at one another and said, you know, this is a book. There's a book here. Mm. So that's what we did. We put together, it's an edited volume with a multitude of essays by different authors, some Christian, some Jewish, some I'm not sure what they are, but they're students of the of this phenomenon, and I'd say it's a heavily heavily Jewish and Christian makeup of the authorship. But we also have documents. We have the letters that George Washington wrote to Hebrew congregations early in his presidency, expressing his support for the Jewish people being able to exercise their faith in America. Now, you know, he didn't at all abandon his own Christian convictions. He made it clear that in some way his regard for the Jews was motivated in large measure by his faith, by his belief that these were the children of Abraham, that in some way they belonged. And I just one thing that's in the book that nobody I know has ever seen before is just a speech by Calvin Coolidge about the Jewish contribution to.
So, Wilfred, let's pause there. The music is hitting. But continuing on the other side of the break, I'm talking with Dr. Wilfred McClay, author of The Jewish Roots of American Liberty. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Pope Francis said, "The key that opens the door to faith is prayer." Join St. Paul Street Evangelization by running a prayer station in the public square. You don't need to be a professional apologist or theologian. Just listen to the needs of the people you encounter. Offer encouragement, take prayer requests, and pray with people. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Hello, friends. Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers here, and I haven't been this excited about an up-and-coming speaker for a long time, Dr. Marcus Peter. Dr. Peter has the gift of combining deep theological insight, wisdom, and knowledge with personal testimony and story in a way that makes the power of the church's teaching and God's love felt deeply in the heart of all who hear him. If you are looking for someone for your next conference, parish mission, or event, look no further than Dr. Marcus Peter.
Visit MarcusBPeter.com to book Dr. Marcus Peter to speak at your event. At the Ave Maria website, you can continue the discussion and education through the Ave Maria Radio's links to social media. Ave Maria Radio has accounts on Facebook, X, TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the social media symbols at the top of your screen. This program is brought to you in part by the following nonprofit, Christendom College.
Each summer, hundreds of high school juniors come to Christendom College for the best week ever. A week-long experience of classes in philosophy, literature, history, and theology. Daily mass and adoration. Activities like canoeing, debating, dancing, and bonfires in Virginia's Shenandoah Valley. Students leave with a deeper appreciation for the liberal arts and lasting friendships that stay with them long after the weekend ends. Learn more at thebestweekever.com.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Why would God permit the devil to tempt his son in the desert? The symbolism behind those temptations, as provided by the Catholic Catechism, gives great insight into God's rationale. Jesus, driven by the Spirit, goes into the desert to live in solitude for 40 days. At the close of that period of prayer and fasting, the devil arrives to attempt to compromise Jesus' filial devotion to God, his Father. Satan tempts Jesus three times, and Jesus rebuffs him three times. This is a recapitulation of Satan's seduction of Adam. Only this time, he loses to the new Adam. It is also a recapitulation of Israel in the desert when the Hebrews provoked God during their 40-year sojourn. In contrast, Jesus is totally obedient to his Father's will. Jesus' victory over temptation is a prelude to his victory over sin on the cross. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Steve and Janet Ray here, inviting you to join us in Portugal, Spain, and France as we follow the three children of Fatima and Saint Bernadette of Lourdes and encounter lots of surprises along the way. These moving apparition sites never fail to inspire awe, healing, and a love for Our Lady, exquisite countryside, and our Spanish chaplain, Father Alfonso Aguilar.
To learn more about your Ave Maria Radio trip, find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at AveMariaRadio.net.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Pete. I'm talking with Wilfred McClay, author of several books, including The Jewish Roots of American Liberty. Wilfred, I want to ask you to pick up where you left off, and I also want to introduce a particular question. Do we do ourselves a disservice if we don't acknowledge the Hebraic roots of the Christian faith and therefore the American founding?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, we went through this early in the history of the church, whether both testaments would be Holy Scripture, and we decided this. Yes, they are. The testimony of Scripture is something that has to be read as a whole. You know, I mean, one of the things I'm actually not myself Catholic, but one of the things I deeply respect and honor about the Catholic Church is the understanding that you can't just pick up the Bible and sort of turn to a page and say, okay, that's what the Bible is saying. You need to study it. It requires an immense amount of learning to arrive at judgments deriving from Scripture and in connection with tradition and the other considerations. And that's why the church has a magisterium and Protestantism has a problem. Mm-hmm. but I don't want to dwell on that. Yes, I think that we do a disservice because there are certain things in Genesis particularly, but in all through the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible, that are, you know, foundational. And you know, the idea that they're foundational to Christian belief, but if you only read the New Testament and read it selectively, read the Sermon on the Mount and think that that's the sum and substance of everything, you're doing yourself and the world a disservice. That There are things, for example, the nature, God's nature. What God is, a creator God. He calls the world into being with his words. you don't see this mm-hmm. in other religious traditions. God brings the world, creates the world out of nothing, and he is separate from the world. He is not part of the world. We're not pantheists. The God is separate from the world, which is one reason why the incarnation, when Jesus being the Word made flesh and dwelling among us, is such an astonishing thing, because it's reaching across, God reaching to us across that barrier. But God, the other thing about the Old Testament is that, for Christians, many of the prescriptions that are in the Bible in the Old Testament have been set aside for Christians. You know, the dietary laws, for example. But the point that is made by the Genesis, Leviticus, etc., is that the way we handle our created nature matters.
Yes.
You know, eating matters. Sex matters. there are ways that we are instructed to go about these things that are revealed to us. They don't necessarily come to us in a matter of course as expressions of nature. In some ways, we're called as people in the Judeo-Christian tradition, biblical people, mm-hmm. to resist nature as much as we are to follow nature. Actually, the language of Thomas would be that we would perfect nature, but nature needs perfecting. It needs perfecting with grace. It needs perfecting with our intentionality. So there is an ontology. There's an anthropology that is inherent in the biblical, and I mean the whole Bible, understanding of man, and that's you can't do without the Hebrew Bible to have that fully. So yes, I agree with your question, the premise of your question, that this is a disservice to omit, but we have for a long time, and that's not just a recent occurrence. You know, it's much of the modern and even medieval West has been inattentive or worse to the Jewish witness. And so I think there's a lot of reconsidering that goes on. But we need, I think, to restore the notion that the world is created by being more powerful than nature, that stands above nature, and that we're made in the image of God. What does that mean, to be made in the image of God? That human life is sacred. The sacrifice of children, including unborn children, is abhorrent. You know, remember the Romans. The Romans went about this with great abandon. Well, I won't say abandoned, but they thought the father of the family, the patria potestas, had the power of infanticide, and so infanticide, abortion, euthanasia. These were all prerogatives of the family, and which is utterly opposed to the notion that we have a dignity. Every single one of us has a dignity that comes from being made in the image of God. This is something unique, and it's in it's in Genesis. It's in the Hebrew Bible, the first definitive statement that we are made in the image of God. Human life sacred, and they sacrifice the children. Abhorrent. Kings are answerable to an ultimate judge. That's one thing, the narrative of the Hebrew Bible lays out. And it is a narrative. It's a story. We have to watch the Israelites fail again and again, fail to live up to that which is expected of them. They say that they have to have a king, and God who said no. Relives. And so, we'll let them have a king and see what happens. God's love of us extends to his willingness to let us exercise our freedom in ways that we really shouldn't. But it's one of the ways we know that we have that freedom. And that is one of the senses in which we're made in the image of God. We have that freedom. But I just emphasize again, the idea that eating and sex, those two things, are morally significant activities, are governed by laws that separate the sacred from the profane. Again, that's a separation that the Bible makes very clearly. Death is not final. It's real, but not final. Rearing children is the greatest blessing of our lives and the most important commandment. Despite the horrible realities of human history, human life is redemptive and not tragic. It's not the eternal recurrence of the same thing, which is the way that the Greeks understood history. History was cyclical. History was eternal return, as Nietzsche called it. No, it's providential. It's a providential story. It's a linear story in which, for some reason, the Israelites, the people of Israel, were chosen to play a special role, to be the light unto the nations, and whose existence as a people through millennia has depended always and ultimately on God. Why have the Jewish people survived all the tribulation and horror that has befallen them some of it coming from us, some coming from us as Christians. Why have they survived? How it's hard not to believe in some kind of providential hand. You know, Paul Johnson, the great English writer, who was a Catholic, and wrote a wonderful history of the Jews, in which he makes this argument that just the mere fact of history that the Jews have survived tells us something about the durability of God's favor towards them. Now, one of the things that's interesting to me, and I'm in dialogue with various theologians about this, is whether, and both Protestant and Catholic theologians are really interested in this issue, have we made a mistake in thinking that God's covenant with Abraham was superseded mm-hmm. by the covenant through Christ? It's an interesting argument. It's a kind of an intricate theological argument that I don't want to bore your listeners with, except to say that...
Well, actually, they've heard that argument a lot. I'm a covenant theologian.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Supersessionism is a very problematic position to hold, even from a biblical perspective.
Well, I agree. I don't want to condemn people who have been brought up in it and to accept it without. But I think I feel like I may be pandering to your audience, but because John Paul II, I think, was utterly transformative and heroic within the Christian world, trying to understand, also trying to find a place for us Protestants. I really appreciate that. But also trying to find a place for the Jews, an enduring place for what he calls our elder brothers in the faith. That was such... Well, I'm delighted to hear that you're exploring these issues on the radio. I think supersessionism particularly is...
Well, we're going to have to stop there, Wilfred, but I'm looking forward to future conversations. I've been talking with Dr. Wilfred McLean, author of The Jewish Roots of the American Liberty. I'm Marcus Peter.